immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed. And running to him, greeted him. And he asked the scribes, "What are you discussing with them?" Then one of the crowd, kneeling down to him, answered and said, "Teacher, I brought you my son, my only child, who has a mute spirit. And wherever he seizes him, he throws him down, and he foams at the mouth, and gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. And it departs from him with great difficulty, bruising him. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast him out, but they could not." And he answered him and said, "Oh, faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me." He sensed a little frustration in Jesus' words. He wasn't trying to be politically correct or socially polite. He cuts right to the chase. "Oh, faithless and perverse generation." That word "perverse" there means to take and lead away, to lead away from the truth or to lead away from something. Now, as I said, here's a perfect picture of spiritual confusion. The disciples who had not gone up there, they were getting beat up by the scribes. They had failed in their attempt to rescue this boy. The dad was mad. He was upset. He saw the sign. He pulled off the highway. He went in and, you know, they just didn't deliver. His expectations were not met. When he filled out the form, you know, "Were you satisfied?" He was crossing off all the ones out of the scale of five. He was not a happy camper. And the people were just, you know, hanging around. It's like I said, it's like some Jerry Springer show or something. They're like, "Oh, check this out." Yeah, they're going at it now. I wonder who's going to win this. And just when it got really, really bad, all of a sudden, here comes Jesus walking down the mountain with the three disciples. And it's interesting, it says, when the crowd saw him, they were greatly amazed. Why in the world were they greatly amazed? I mean, the nine disciples were there. Generally, when you find the disciples, you see Jesus. And a couple commentators have said different things. Some of them think, well, maybe they just weren't expecting him or something. I don't know. I like what a few of them said. They mentioned that when Moses went up on the mountain with the Lord and he came back, he looked a little bit different. What looked different about Moses? His face was shining. Now Jesus goes up on the mountain. We saw how Jesus, you know, Moses could hide his shiny face with a cloth over his face. Jesus, his clothes couldn't even hold back the glory. Even his clothes and shone like the sun. So I think when Jesus came down off the mountain, I think he might have just still been a little bit lit up. I don't know. You know, when he came down that thing and they saw him and they ran, it says they were greatly amazed. He probably still had some of that glory just radiating off of him. His face was just maybe not quite like the sun. Maybe it was just a little bit like the moon, but he was probably still lit up. His clothes probably still had that shimmer to it. Coming down off the mountain, coming into this situation. And they're like, man, now it's getting really good. So they come running up to him and they're greeting him and everything, and he just goes right past them. He just goes straight to the source. He cuts to the bottom line and he goes to the scribes and he says, "What are you discussing with them?" I love that about Jesus. He can be tender, but he can cut to the chase too. You know, smokescreen doesn't slow him down. And they, you know, "What are you discussing with them?" And that's when the boy's father comes in and explains the situation. "I brought my son here, my only son. He's had this problem. I don't know what to do. It's so frustrating. You know, when you love your kid and you see them suffering, you see them in torment, it rips your heart out. And you can hear the frustration in his voice. This has been going on. He said, "I brought you my only son and your people couldn't help him. I don't know where to turn after this. I've been so frustrated for so long. I've had no as an answer for so long. And I thought maybe when I saw your disciples, now things might change. Now I might have some hope and things might be different, but they couldn't do anything for him. And now the scribes are hollering at them. They're saying they're all messed up, and they're hollering back, you guys are all messed up. And I don't care who's right or wrong. I just want my son to be made whole. He's my little boy. You can hear the anguish in his voice. This was not a theological discussion for him. This was real life. This was his flesh and bones. I just want my boy whole. I know what that's like. You know, when I worked for Mayf in the claims department of this car insurance company, and people would call up sometimes, and they were innocent victims in a car wreck, and they would call up all frustrated. They'd be like, man, here I am, minding my own business. Some guy comes along and plows into me. I'm in this wreck. And your appraiser's saying one thing, and the body shop is saying something else. Now the rent-a-car place wants to take the rent-a-car away. I don't know who's right and who's wrong. I'm not a professional. I just want my car back. I could sympathize with that. And I have to do a little public relation dance, kind of backstep a little bit and try to smooth things over and, smooth out the ruffles and get everybody nice and happy again. But, Jesus never danced for anybody. He didn't have to do any dance. He never apologized. He didn't have to backstep or stumble around or try to, do some kind of public relations things. He always cut right to the truth. And he looks around, and what does he see? He sees a circus. He sees the unbelief. He sees the carnality. He sees people like the scribes trying to exploit their situation for their own benefit. He sees all kinds of flesh, all kinds of confusion, all kinds of chaos. And he just cuts to the chase and he says to the crowd and to the man, to the scribes, O faithless and perverse generation, how long will I be with you? How long will I bear with you? Maybe not quite the answer the man was expecting. Now, we want to be gracious ambassadors for Christ, don't we? We don't want to offend people unnecessarily. We don't want to be judgmental with people. But it's interesting what he says here about their unbelief. The Bible calls unbelief a sin. It says that unbelief is evil. And I know we got to want to be gracious with people, and when they don't believe, we don't want to like beat them over the head. And we want to say, you just don't, maybe if they understood, if they had a better understanding, if somebody explained it to them better, then maybe they could gain an understanding. And so we want to be gracious, and we'll bend over backwards for them. But and that's wonderful, and I don't want to take anything away from that, but it doesn't take away from the bottom line. When they stand before Him on that day, God still calls unbelief a sin, and He still labels it as evil. In fact, it says in Hebrews 3:12, it says, Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. It's sin. Because first of all, it calls God a liar. And it sets ourselves up above Him. So we stand in judgment upon Him and pass judgment on to Him as to whether He has sufficiently convinced us of His truth. Calls God a liar. And it's idolatry because it sets us above Him where we sit in judgment on God. But second, it's a sin because our actions are based on what we believe to be true. Whatever we perceive as the truth about life, about our situation, about God and about ourselves, that determines what kind of actions we take. It determines what kind of decisions we make in our life, whether to live righteously by faith or whether to take things in our own hands and be the Lord, the master of our own destiny and run our life by our own decisions, whatever appears to be good to us and the chaos that that brings because of our limited sight and understanding. We can't do works of faith unless we have the faith to do the works. So without beating that to death, we need to understand how God views our unbelief. This is not a trivial thing to Him. This is a very important thing to Him. Salvation is based on belief. We're saved by grace through faith. So it's not a trivial thing. Now, God still loves the unbeliever in spite of their sin. It doesn't mean He just wants to, you know, He's anxious to beat them down. He still passionately loves the unbeliever. And we see this in Jesus right here where He's talking to this man. And I want to refer to this man. We saw the scribes in the crowd, and they're just unbelievers. They're just there to exploit the situation. They don't care. It's for their own entertainment and curiosity. There's not a whole lot of compassion there, maybe a little bit, but they're basically unbelievers. But we come to this man whom Jesus included in His rebuke. And when I look at this man, I see him as a believing unbeliever. Now, why would I say that? Well, he believes to a degree, but he doesn't quite have faith. Let's unpack this a little bit. All right, Mark 9, let's go down a little bit further in the story. Mark 9, 20 says, "Then they brought him, the boy, to him, Jesus. And when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him. And he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he asked his father, 'How long has this been happening to him?' And he said, 'From childhood. And often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us.'"